Hello, internet people. This is Alicia Emerson doing my very first podcast ever with my good friend, Samantha Farinacci. Say hello.
Hey, everybody.
All right. So Sam has been a friend of mine for like 10 years. My husband and I were at her wedding to her husband. We both went to Fuller together. We met working at the same church. We left that church and went on to pursue other passions. Sam has always been about Jesus and teenagers. Those are her like two top things that she cares about. Well, and Jason, I mean, but yeah. And but Jason, it's also always So, but it's always been about one of the things that I really like love and respect and honor about Sam is that she's always been committed to living ethically and simply and justly. And I've been working with her for the past 2 months to sort of glean more about how she makes the decisions that she makes about money, how to use our money more ethically and simply and justly. Because she has been thinking critically and theologically about everything for like a long time. So she's fearless in sharing this with others, including me. And so I wanted to just invite all of you in to hear this wisdom as I ask her some questions that have been kind of on my mind. So I want you to get to know Sam as well. So I've been talking with Sam for about 2 months about money because money is a really huge stressor for me. Mm-hmm. And not because I don't have enough, which I think is a big stressor for most people when they are talking about money as an issue. They mean that they don't have enough or there's too much debt. And that's not what I'm dealing with. I'm talking more about the stress of money that is deciding whether or not purchases are based in need or want and having choice fatigue and how do you get the best deal and are you supposed to spend money or save money or give it away and how to make those choices ethically and what does God think about how we use our money. So Sam, money is a stressor for me, but how do you feel about money?
I kind of went from the phase of being worried about money in the one sense you were describing of, oh my word, like I'm going to default on my tuition payment. I can't pay my rent, sort of that phase, very rapidly into the wanting to use money responsible, more like the phase that you're in, like kind of overnight, to be honest. So my feelings kind of went from, oh my word, I don't know how to make all the things happen, to, oh, I actually can make all the things happen. Now I'm the essential things, necessities, et cetera. And now I need to actually think about the responsibility piece more carefully. So I feel kind of like lucky, I think, in that way. Like I see that as kind of a blessing, because I didn't have the in-between phase, which can be difficult to move from. So I didn't have like a phase where it was like this really big source of anxiety of like, how will I manage all of my choices? It really was just like, I was very fortunate that at the phase when I started having enough money to be able to really be about the things that I wanted to be about by way of money, that I was kind of also ready for that responsibility. So it hasn't really been a big source of stress for me. I actually find it to be kind of a fun part of my life. It feels kind of like this game that me and God are kind of in on that we get to be about in the world. And so, yeah, so for me, it's kind of a fun thing, to be honest. Yeah.
Okay, so I want to get there. It's not fun for me. So then because your passion is really like teens and just helping them manage the hell that is puberty,
yes.
Why are you helping me with this?
Yeah, well, where I feel like our conversations began and where I feel the most relevance, I think, in our conversations is that money affects everything. And this is something that we've been talking a lot about and that I feel like is important for people to be okay stating. I feel like we have so commonly made money this like subcategory that we don't want to talk about and we feel sort of bad about and we feel sort of ashamed about, those of us that have plenty, and then those of us that don't have enough sort of feel like there's just no way forward. And so it's just this kind of like subgroup category. But really, more so what I think is that money touches all aspects of life, because you're really spending most of your life either trying to earn money or trying to spend money to get what you need, want, etc. And so really kind of for me, whatever you're into, money is going to come up. So I am into adolescence, but I'm also into Jesus, as you had mentioned. And for me, I think he's great. And so for me, I find that like, if I want my whole life to be about Jesus, and if money comes up in all aspects of life, then there has to be kind of some opportunities to reflect on ways that Jesus can be present in that, so that it's not absent of that. So I'm always excited when I have friends or family who are sort of like, wait a minute, realizing this, that money can affect all areas. And so I really love supporting people in that journey. Also, I feel that it is relevant for the upcoming generations to have those of us that are kind of millennials or Gen Xers, like to really kind of take responsibility for what we're doing with money so that the next generations have some good templates and models. Because right now, their experience is that they don't have a lot of good models that are sustainable and ethical and responsible, and in our case, Christian. And so it feels, I think, for them like, how will I ever be an adult with any kind of moral conscience when it comes to financial decision making? So I feel like any time that someone is up for that task, that it's, I love being a part of it. Mostly. Yeah.
Well, I am super grateful and have been really blessed these past couple months with just the conversations that we've had. And I will say that while money is still a big stressor for me, I was noticing over the holidays that it is less stressful. I don't know that anything has like changed dramatically so much as my anxiety levels come down and I feel more prepared to make whatever changes are going to need to be made over the next year or so to sort of manage money better. Yeah. So you were saying that you really started thinking about how to use money like ethically, responsibly, sustainably, right about the time that you stopped having debt?
Okay, yeah. So when I was in college, I was an English major and I took this course. So if you think about your college place financially, right, mm-hmm. It's a tighter place financially. It's not the same as people who are like destitute or actually in kind of real poverty. But for those of us that are on the sort of privileged end of the spectrum, it's a tighter season financially, I think. And so in that season, I was taking this course called Women's Writers for my major. And one of the books that we were reading was called Slave, My True Story, or Slave, A True Story, or something like that. And so this book tells the story. So I think I was maybe like a sophomore in college. So I maybe like whatever that is, 19 years old, 20 maybe. And so the book tells this story of a woman who had been trafficked, basically. And in the early chapters of the book, the woman is being trafficked in Africa. And full disclosure, I being 19, 20, whatever I was like, well, that's something that happens in Africa. Like, it's really sad. It's really terrible. I should care about this, but it's quote unquote over there. So then throughout the book, it's an amazing story. It's really well written and it's really engaging. And I was really like sucked into it. And I distinctly remember I was working an on-campus job at a fitness center. So it was a cool job because you could just sit there and do your homework, basically. And so I was sitting there reading the book, and I remember coming to the part where she's then trafficked to England, like London. And it's funny, it kind of feels like it might have been a God thing, because this isn't a phrase that I use a lot, but I just remember sitting in this gym, you know, this like, as I'm a college student, and I remember saying, oh my goodness, like this is happening in like the free world, like the Democratic, like this. I've never before or since used the term the free world. I don't even know where I sort of got that idea. But I was like, oh my gosh, in the free world, like in England, like a place that like speaks English and a place that is like me, people are being trafficked. And I just had like an absolute crisis, you know, like I just could not believe. So this was the first time that I ever learned about human trafficking. As a phenomenon that was happening currently and in the free world, whatever I meant by that. And I was absolutely shocked, and it kind of put me on this journey. Simultaneously, the church that I was attending at the time was a good church, a church that, you know, was good to the people and loved Jesus and all this stuff, had a lot of conversation about tithing. And for those of you that are not familiar with this term, it's this idea that Christians have that it's a good idea to give 10% of your money, typically to the church you're a part of, or maybe 10% of your money to other charitable organizations. So this idea of 10% should sort of like be used for God's purposes or something like that. So my church was having lots of conversations about this. And really kind of like saying things like, man, we really need people to give this 10%. You know, we really need people to tithe, just lots of conversation in that direction. And I sort of had this moment where I distinctly remember, again, sitting in this gym and putting these two ideas together, where it was like, wait. So there's human trafficking happening. My church is talking about this 10% business. What about the 90% of income that we are not thinking about where it's going? And who knows if maybe my purchases or my like 90% of whatever I was making at the time, which was not a lot, but who cares, if that 90% is funding or fueling organizations that might be trafficking people. Like, who cares about the 10% that might be going to whatever like philanthropic thing if 90% might be endorsing, you know, unethical businesses or whatever? And like, how would we know? And so that kind of put me on this path of saying like, whoa, like it's one thing to talk about the 10%, but what about like the 90%, like the things that we're buying and purchasing all the time that even in a church setting, we're not being asked to reflect very deeply about. So that was kind of the beginning of my path of like, okay, what do I do with this 90%? 10% is one thing, but the bulk of my income needs to be really going somewhere good.
I see. So then you had this like epiphany moment, and this sort of started you on a path. And obviously at the time, like you said, you were a college student, so there's a lot more debt and not a lot of, you know, money to spare, as it were. Sometimes there's right. not even money for savings or whatever. So, mm-hmm. but then as you've gotten through college and done graduate school and gotten married and all these things, you've had to make a bunch of financial decisions along yes. the way. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering, like, that was the beginning. Who have been the biggest influences, like, along the path mm-hmm. for how you think about any of these things, whether, you know, making purchases that are environmentally sustainable or, you know, ethically made or ethically sourced or whatever?
Right. This one is a little harder to answer because I found it to be this kind of, at the time, now again, this would have been, you know, 10, 15 years ago now, I guess. And at the time, there wasn't a lot that I was able to find. This is like the early days of the internet and whatever. So it was a little bit of a slow journey that I remember. So I went through a phase where I thought like, well, okay, it's about just not spending very much money. So that you have more to use for charitable things, whatever. Then I went through a phase where I was like, okay, everything, I'm just going to buy everything used. And that phase has kind of persisted, and I can talk more about that later. But the idea of, it really clicked for me pretty early on of like, well, I have this hunch that there's enough items in the world already that we might not need to produce very many new items to like satisfy all of my like needs, preferences, whatever. Mm-hmm. So that thing was really influential. And then I came upon this idea of like fair trade, which now you can learn a lot about. Also certified B corporations are another movement that has happened, which is more about environmentally sustainable practices. There's also some great organizations that sort of rank, they give like a letter grade to, mm-hmm. To different companies. And so I started to just, I mean, I got to the point where like, if I was shopping at the time at the mall, cause that's just what I knew. Then I would just, if I was at a store, I would just look up like, how is this store doing? And then I would just move along if it didn't have, you know, a high ranking or if there didn't appear to be fair trade items, et cetera. And then what I found was that actually far and wide, most companies were not, let's say, going above and beyond to reach these kinds of ethical standards. And so I kind of came to terms with the fact that I was going to have to do this kind of all pretty much from scratch, that there wasn't a lot. Yeah, so I don't actually have a ton of influences except for the fair trade movement. That was really influential for me, for sure. That was a big turning point in my journey, was when I learned about that idea. And there's certifications, and there's, you know, that was a really helpful like way of thinking for me.
Okay, cool. So there wasn't like a book or an article or anything that, other than this first one, Slave, a True Story or whatever, that really sort of sparked this awareness that all these problems that we think of as being over there or maybe in the past are actually still problems that persist today and persist here.
No, because for me, my experience of it was like that book just opened the door completely. Like to me, it was just all of a sudden, like it just made sense to me that when I would read my tags on a shirt or whatever that said made in Bangladesh, I was just, or made in Vietnam or made in China or whatever, I was like, oh my word, like all these people, who are they and what's happening to them and their life? Like it was just like a flood of like, now I need to know about all of these things. So it wasn't, there weren't any more like major landmarks or benchmarks for influences, I don't think. Yeah.
So then when I actually started asking you and about money actually a year ago. Mm-hmm. If you realize, I remember it was actually maybe even a little more than a year ago. And one of the things that you messaged me one time was, you're like, well, Alicia, as you think about money, you need to answer the question, what is money for? And that question, what is money for, has like plagued me ever since you've asked it, which is why I think you're very good at what you do. So, but now I'm curious, how do you answer that question? How do you, Samantha, answer that question?
Yeah.
He's four.
Right. So a little bit, I kind of think there is no answer, which is kind of the point, but I do have one myself that I kind of use. But I think the point really is that this is one of those cheesy, like the point is the journey as opposed to the answer. Like, I think when we are constantly asking God, what is this money for? What is this? Who is this money for? What is the purpose of this money? That just that discipline is kind of the end, you know, of itself, because I think that those answers will change, you know, throughout your life. But generally what, like the sort of operating principle that I think has been true in my life comes from this really, it's, I'm going to butcher it, but I should have looked it up before we had our meeting. But there's this Native American like story that I'm going to butcher right now. But it's been really influential in my life. But the story is, you get anyone who's listening to this, look up the real story. It's better than this. But it's this idea that there are two wolves, and these wolves are often like fighting with each other and they're disrupting the village and all of this. And so one of them is a good wolf and one of them is kind of a bad wolf. It's a bad seed. And so there's kind of this, like, how do we solve this problem? And the solution is that you feed the good wolf and you let the bad wolf starve. So this phrase of like feeding the good wolf has been really influential in my kind of theological journey because unlikely are we to like eradicate all evils in our lifetime.
That's a bit beyond our reach.
Yeah. So for me, what I have tried to make, you know, a discipline in my life is, okay, look for the good wolves and feed them, feed these good wolves that I see wherever they pop up. And I think God brings us good wolves to start stuffing so that they become bigger in the world. And then hopefully as the evil wolves are starved more, then they become smaller. And so for me, money is really feeding the good, it's about feeding the good wolves. So these may be things in my own life. So I know that we might immediately go to, oh, she means donating to charity. That's not all I mean. I mean things like participating in ethical businesses. And so purchasing things from companies that are about things that I think are good in the world. That would be to me a good wolf. I think education is a good wolf. I think that sustainable practices, like so things that are good for the environment is a good wolf. Things that are good for my relationships with people. So gifts to me are a good wolf. So these, all of these kinds of things. So to me, money is like food for the good wolves, is what it really feels like to me, is that we are invited as Christians, I think, to be about making the world better, which is kind of obvious. but I think that it's one of those things that's such an obvious truth that it remains hidden. It's one of those like, it remains concealed because it's so obvious. Mm-hmm. But I think it's kind of become hidden, actually. I think that for most Christians that I know, that's not saying all Christians in all the world, et cetera, but most of the Christians that I interact with, which are a lot, there is this sense that, again, just that 10% is designed for making the world a better place. And then the 90%, you just kind of do whatever you want. And I get that, but I think it's more enjoyable to say, like, actually, I want to participate with God in cultivating a world that's full of good things. Mm-hmm. And I can actually fund some of these good things. Like, this is one of the roles that I get to play. Like, God is going to do, you know, the heavy lifting, but I get to do this thing. And that's for me what money is for, is to feed the good wolf, you know.
I see. Well, and then so in that mindset, then it's not just what can I do with this 10% to feed the good wolves, but how can I feed myself and my family, but also make sure that the farmers and the suppliers and the drivers and the whatnot are also who are, you know, cultivating the land environmentally and soundly and organically or whatever, are being paid a living wage.
Yes. So
that even then, part of that 90% is meeting maybe my own personal need, but it's also essentially like lifting up my community and and all those people along the way that makes it possible for me to not have to tend acres of land and harvest my own stuff, which we would all perish if I was responsible for that.
Yes. Right.
So to have this framework then has really changed then that then the full 100% of the money that we get, earn, mm-hmm. however you want to say it, can be used to, as you say it, feed the good wolves, or in other words, meet our needs, but also meet our wants in a way that is good for good sustainably or to others as well. Am I understanding that correctly?
Right. I actually think that the way it has gone for me, I think, is that the more I've gotten into this, actually the more that my needs and wants and preferences and things like that have been like easier to take care of. Like, I sort of think it's like when we feed all the good wolves, then there's just more of the good wolves